Now we're in the book of Deuteronomy, right? And we are in chapter 32. Now, there's all sorts of hard things to be able to clarify in this chapter, which doesn't seem, on surface, make an awful lot of logical sense. But you remember that last week, we read in 31st chapter that God says, Moses, this is the song you are to sing. Write it down and teach them to sing. For in their latter days, they will hear this song.
Deuteronomy 32. Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and let the earth hear the words of my mouth. May my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, like gentle rain upon the tender grass, and like showers upon the herb. For I will proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. The rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are justice, a God of faithfulness and without iniquity. Just and upright is he. They have dealt corruptly with him. They are no longer his children because they are blemished. They are a crooked and twisted generation. Do you thus repay the Lord, you foolish and senseless people? Is not he your father who created you, who made you and established you? Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your father and he will show you, your elders and they will tell you. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God. But the Lord's portion is his people, Yaakov his allotted heritage. He found him in a desert land, and in the howling waste of the wilderness. He encircled him, he cared for him, he kept him as the apple of his eye. Like the eagle that stirs up its nest, that flutters over its young, spreading out its wings, catching them, bearing them upon its pinions. The Lord alone guided them. No foreign god was with him. He made him ride on high places of the land, and he ate the produce of the field. And he suckled him with honey out of the rock, and oil out of the flinty rock, curds from the herd and milk from the flock, with fat of lambs, rams of Bashan, and goats, with the very finest of the wheat. And you drank foaming wine made from the blood of the grape. Yet Yeshurun grew fat and kicked. You grew fat, stout, and sleek. Then he forsook God who made him and scoffed at the rock of his salvation. They stirred him to jealousy with strange gods. With abominations they provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons that were no gods, to gods they had never known, to new gods that had come recently, whom your fathers had never dreaded. You were unmindful of the rock that bore you, and you forgot the God who gave you birth. The Lord saw it and spurned them because of the provocation of his sons and his daughters. And he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end will be, for they are a perverse generation, children in whom is no faithfulness. They have made me jealous with what is no God. They have provoked me to anger with their idols. So I will make them jealous with those who are no people. I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation. For a fire is kindled in my anger, and it burns to the depths of Sheol, devours the earth and its increase, and sets on fire the foundations of the mountains. And I will heap disasters upon them. I will spend my arrows on them. They shall be wasted with hunger and devoured by plague and poisonous pestilence. I will send the teeth of beasts against them with the venom of things that crawl into dust. Outdoors the sword shall be reaved, and indoors terror. For a young man and woman alike, the nursing child with the man of gray hairs. I would have said, I will cut them to pieces, I will wipe them from human memory. had I not feared provocation by the enemy, lest their adversaries should misunderstand, lest they should say, our hand is triumphant. It was not the Lord who did all this. For they are a nation void of counsel, and there is no understanding in them. If they were wise, they would understand this. They would understand and discern the latter end. How could one have chased 1,000 and two have put 10,000 to flight, unless their rock had sold them and the Lord had given them up? For their rock is not our rock. Our enemies are by themselves. For their vine comes from the vine of Sodom and from the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes are grapes of poison. Their clusters are bitter. Their wine is the poison of serpents and the cruel venom of asps. Is not this laid up in store for me, sealed up in my treasuries? Vengeance is mine and recompense for the time when their foot shall slip, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and their doom comes swiftly. For the Lord will vindicate his people and have compassion on his servants. When he sees their power is gone, and there is none remaining, bond or free, then he will say, where are their gods, the rock in which they took refuge? Who ate the fat of their sacrifices and drank the wine of their drink offering? Let them rise up and help you. Let them be your protection. See now that I, even I, am he, and there is no god beside me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal, and there is none that can deliver out of my hand. For I lift up my hand to heaven and swear, as I live forever, if I sharpen my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will take vengeance on my adversaries, and I will repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood, and my sword shall devour flesh. With the blood of the slain and the captives, from the long-haired heads of the enemy. Rejoice with him, O heavens! Bow down to him, all gods! For he avenges the blood of his children, and takes vengeance on his adversaries. He repays those who hate him, and cleanses his people's land. Moses came and recited all the words of this song in the hearing of the people, he and Joshua the son of Nun. And when Moses had finished speaking all these words to all Israel, he said to them, take to heart all the words by which I am warning you today, that you may command them to your children, that they may be careful to do all the words of this law. For it is no empty word for you, but your very life. And by this word you shall live long in the land that you are going over the Jordan to possess. That very day the Lord spoke to Moses. Go up this mountain of the Abarim, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, opposite Jericho, the land and view of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel for a possession. And die on the mountain which you go up, and be gathered to your people, as Aharon your brother died on Mount Hor, and was gathered to his people, because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel, in the waters of Meribah Kadesh, in the wilderness of Zin. And because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel. For you shall see the land before you, but you shall not go there, into the land that I am giving to the people of Israel.
I know it's quite a long chapter, but there's an awful lot of things that are kind of deep inside of this particular song of Moses. And he's told to sing this song. And there's a lot of things that's been translated that doesn't seem sometimes make sense, or maybe yes it does, but there are other things inside of these special Hebrew words that gives us a deeper understanding of God. So we're going to go through some of them today. Before I go there, I'm just going to read this thing from Revelations. And they sang, a great and marvelous your works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true your ways, O King of the nations. Who shall not fear you, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you are holy alone. You are holy, the only one holy. For all nations shall come and worship before you. And your judgments have been manifested. That time when all nations will come and serve him is the song of the Lamb. We're not there yet, are we? So we go here in Deuteronomy 32. Moses opens up a very powerful statement. I'm going to read this in English in the New King James and the other translations I've got. Give ear, O heavens, and I will speak. Okay, so now he is, you know, telling people, telling the earth and heaven to listen to what I'm going to say to you. Basically, he's talking about God, saying, listen, O heaven, and listen, O earth. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to talk to you now. He says, my teaching, my doctrine will drop as the rain. Verse 4. The rock, his work perfect, for all his ways just, a Elohim of truth without injustice, righteousness and upright. In the very part here, great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God Almighty. Starts right out here in this book. Same kind of words, different phrase. But just and holy are your ways. They're right. They're good. And they're just. Now, this thought begins to change in verse 5. It goes from now, I want you to listen to what I'm saying. Now this is what I'm saying. You have corrupted yourself. That's not good news, is it? Okay. Remember, this is for the house of Israel. And you have found something. I have found something in you. You're perverse and you're crooked. Well, not good things, are they? And then verse 6, just a very fascinating terminology. Did you thus deal with Yahuwah, O foolish and unwise people? Is he not your father who brought you? Has he not made you and established you? Of course, he said, now I want you to go back in time and read what took place. Ask your elders. Ask your fathers. Biblical, but it's way back. What did he do? And help show us what he did. Explain to us what he did. He said, they will tell you. So toward the very end, basically, he says, your ways, you don't even consider. You don't even know where you're going. I will tell you where you're going. I know where you're going. And I'm going to have to do something for you, against you. Because he says here, Yahshua's portion. What is Yahshua's portion? His people. He owns them. It belongs to him. That's his portion. What about the other portion? He says, Jacob, the place of his inheritance. And as he had read before, Jacob, he found him in a deserted land, in a wasteland, wilderness. And what did he do? He encircled him. What he could encircle, he could protect this guy, he could bring him in to his world. And Jacob is the like the pupil of his eye. Well, what? Think about that for just a minute. You've got an eyeball, right? Why is the eyeball, that pupil, so important? Opens to light, okay. So what?
You see through.
You see through, okay. Okay, let me ask you the question. Let me reverse myself a little bit, okay. When you have a little child, how special are they? Aren't they the center point? All right. Ask any mother to get a little baby. That's the center point now of her world. The baby is very, very... And her eyes are always on the baby. Watching the baby. Keeping her mind and her thoughts upon the baby. The needs of the baby. Food for the baby. Taking care of that baby. All right? So his eyes on Jacob. Keeping his eye on him. Constantly. Watching out for him. Looking out for him. And he said, now, I have made Jacob, verse 13, or he has made Jacob to ride in the high places of the earth. And he might eat the produce of the fields, that he might do, actually says honey from the rock. Odd, isn't it? Something that's nice, sweet, from the rock. What rock? I am the rock. Pleasant things coming from God. Pleasant things coming from Him. And oil from the flinty rock. Oil. What good is oil? It helps bring the forth light, get your light here. Plus, oil has a certain specific representation. We won't necessarily go there today. And he says, I've given you courage for the cattle, milk from the flock, fat lambs, rams that breed with Bashan, and goats, and the choicest wheat, and you drank wine, which is the blood of the grapes. Odd word, isn't it? What does he talking about? Oh, you should know that by heart now, right? What does it represent? Life. We have the blood of the animals, now we have the blood of the grapes. What did Joshua talk about? The 17th chapter, I think it is. No, 15th chapter. John, I believe it is. Is I am the vine. Oh, who takes care of the vine? His Father. Because it belongs to him. Now, we know from his parable that from this vine, branches come out. Right? I told you what the old Hebrew word for tribe really means. Remember what I said it was? Branch. It branches out from the center. That's why they had the three tribes on all four sides of the tabernacle. Branch it out from the center, which is the vine. Real easy to understand that one. Verse 15 is very interesting. How many of you know what Yashurun means? Got a little margin in your book? He's going to check on his little thing. That's not fair. It's a simple meaning, right? Comes from a root word meaning to be right, to be straight, to be level-headed, to be upright, to be lawful. So Yeshurun means the upright one. What happened to him? He got fat. Became obese. And he, the upright one, forsook Elohim, who formed him, who made him, who established him, whom he had brought in, and was the apple or the eye of his pupil. Kept an eye on him. In the latter part of that one, it's different terminologies, different way of being stated. In some of your books, you're going to have and lightly esteemed, or another word, I think it's scornfully esteemed. Basic in Hebrew means and dishonored the rock. That's a little more powerful word, isn't it? Dishonored him. How? You grew fat. You've forgotten him. When you forget him, there's nothing that gives you great honor. It's over with. And it provoked Elohim to zealousness. Every time by the way, you've heard me say it before, when you use the word, some of you translated, use the word jealous. That's a horrible, horrible translation because in modern English, that means you're envious. You're jealous of somebody having something that, this has nothing to do with Hebrew. And actually in 1611, jealousy wasn't meaning I'm jealous because you got more money than I do. It means I am angry, furious at you. Because, why? You got something that you should not have had. And here with God says, you have made me mad. Verse 17 is a really interesting word in Hebrew. I'll try to break it down best way I could. And breaking it down in different languages, I mean different sections. Okay? And he says, you sacrificed to demons, some of your translations, and not to Elohim. To Elohim they did not know. And the new Elohim, they arrived, that their fathers did not fear. That sounds odd. What are you talking about here? Well, try to explain it. Because it doesn't say not to Elohim in Hebrew. It said, you have sacrificed to demons, non-Elohim. Now, what do you think he meant by that? Principalities of the air are Elohims. Under those Elohims are, no, they're not more Elohims. They have to, their people answer to that particular Elohim. Gabriel, he's got angels beneath him. Michael's got angels beneath him. But Michael and Gabriel are principalities of the air, powerful, powerful ones. Now, when we look at a demon, during the biblical times of Christ, when a demon took over somebody, were they an Elohim? No, they're just plain demon, yes.
Regarding the El, because the Elohim comes from El, right? And El is nothing more than head of, or something in charge of. The Elohim,
right,
or
yes.
People who multiple things are in charge of something. It's where you get the same, where we get our name or title for God, who's Elohim, the great one who's in charge of all the Els,
right.
Where you get it from. Which also, where of course, Islam gets their name, which means the same thing, which is the Al, or Allah. But, El itself is used in anything that has in charge of something else. If you are ahead of something, you are an El, whether it be ahead of a family.
And Hebrew, in Hebrew, it's a weird terminology. He has sacrificed to demons, non-Elohim. Didn't say no Elohim. Didn't say another Elohim. Didn't say not to Elohim. It says non-existing power. A non-existing strength. That's really odd in the way the Hebrew is written. And he says that non-existing strength that your fathers had never known. They never heard of them. They didn't even participate in them. They had no idea. And even knew non-existing Elohim, non-existing powers. Let me ask you a question. Have you known anybody? Give me an example. What would be an example of a non-Elohim that people would have given sacrifice to?
I won't say sacrifice to, but people who raise up incorrectly your own child.
Okay.
You as a parent, if you raise your child up greater than your family, or as the head essentially of your family, or take control of it, you are giving something power that is undue.
All right. Another one. I mean,
cars.
Cars?
Yeah. It's not a spiritual thing, but it can overwhelm.
It's a non-powerful thing. A stone that has no value. It's just a stone. It's a non-Elohim. It has no power over you. It has no jurisdiction over you. You have complete, total jurisdiction over a stone, a piece of wood, a tree, your car. Your job. This is what this is referring to when there is no power. But how many do we sacrifice to no powers? Have you heard of workaholic? They are under the power of working, but what power does that have? Nothing. Yes.
But where would we classify money? Because we think money has a lot of power.
Yeah, right. And it can do nothing for us. The problem is the money is the power or the strength. So it's non-existing force. And people will sacrifice their life for money. They'll sacrifice their life for a job. Their life for a car. They'll sacrifice their children for a car. They'll sacrifice anything for a house. That's non-power. Do you understand what I'm saying when it says non-Elohim, a non-powerful thing, has no power whatsoever? Stones have no power. Rocks have no power. Trees have no power. Yes?
Telephones.
All right. Enough said about that, right?
Question is, can a demon get into that power?
Okay, does a demon have power over you, or can you have power over a demon? Demons cannot have power over you unless you fear them. You allowed a non-powerful thing, like a demon, to take over. All right? And it has no authority, it has no jurisdiction, it's weak. I mean, I think it was James, not mistaken. Even the demons are terrified and frightened of God. What else is new? You know? That's a non-powerful thing. When people have come to me, it's only happened maybe twice, and they have a demon-possessed person, I am not afraid of them, nor am I afraid of that demon-possessed person or that demon inside. I'm not afraid they're going to come out and get me. It had no power. Has no authority. It can't take over my life. Unless I begin to think, in order for the demon not to hurt me, I must give to that demon something that demon wants. Instantly that takes place. You have sacrificed something. You understand what I'm saying? It's not that hard to figure out, right?
Be fair to say, if I give, according to that statement, something that has no power, and I give it an inch, all of a sudden it can take power. Is that
you have surrendered your authority, your power. You've given up. You're living in a world of fear. When you have fear overwhelming you, then fear becomes your power that overrules you. Fear is what God said to Joshua, says, be brave, be courage. What was the third one? Yeah. Knowing that and believing that, so God is the one that has the power to do these things, and no one else does. Now, let me ask you a question. How many, don't have to answer it. How many have always believed the devil and Satan is a very, very powerful being? That he knows an awful lot. He has the power to do anything he wants to do. Read the book of Job. He can't even move anywhere unless God says, okay, I want you to do this. And he did it. He couldn't do it before. Do you believe God has power over Satan? In a sense, a non-powerful thing. Yes, he does. What did Yahshua say to Satan? Get lost! Put in our verb today. Get out of my life! Get gone! Get rid of you! And he left. Because he had no authority, had no power. Remember, the temptation was to get him, that is Yahshua, under the power of the Satan. Yes?
I was actually reading this thing on a blog several years ago now, but your conversation just brings it back to my mind about these Elohims, if you will. One of the Elohims that kind of popped to my mind is the what they call the goddess Pele on the Hawaiian Islands. And there's this beach somewhere on one of the Hawaiian Islands that it is said that if you don't give like some kind of sacrifice, I think it's like a simple thing, like a rock or something like that, but unless you make some kind of acknowledgement to Pele, if you go onto that beach, the high tide will come and, you know, you can get injured and hurt and this and that and the other. And so this woman in the blog, though, was a believer in Yeshua, and she said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give this, even though it's a token thing, it was like a nothing thing. I'm not going to give this token or whatever this is to Pele. I'm going to go on the beach and have a good time. And all the people were warning her, oh, if you don't, you know, give that little thing to Pele, then she's going to wash you up or you're going to drown or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And so she said a prayer to the Lord before she went out, and she actually specifically prayed that God would protect her as a witness to the fact that Pele does not have the power that God has.
Yeah, right.
And so she enjoyed herself on the beach, came back, and everyone was like,
she's still alive.
She's still alive. She didn't get hurt. She didn't drown or whatnot.
Yeah.
So so you do have these different categories. So maybe Pele would be an Elohim. She does have some power, but she does not have the ultimate power. And when we... But if we allow these lesser beings to have power over us, we've already given up without a fight.
That's correct. And one more statement. You know, sometimes our job, we're so fearful of losing it, our job becomes our boss. But we are in control of the job. Right? Job doesn't rule us, we rule job. But people are terrified of losing their job. That doesn't add up very clear. Yeah, who gave him the job in the first place? Right. Okay. Did you have something else, Ellie?
At Sacred Falls, that very thing happened to me because it floods. And all the way up, it says, don't do something. Oh, beware. Don't go up here. Beware of the floods. And everybody took their rock and a leaf and set it down. And I thought, no. And I went up, and it floods. When it floods, we were up there for 3 or 4 hours. It didn't flood. Came back and later was talking to 2 Christians in my business, and they said, had I gone up there? And they said, did you do the rock and the leaf? And I said, no. And they said, what? I said, I don't worship that God. I have this other God. And they said, did it flood on you? Because they lived there for years. And I said, no. I just said, God, please don't make it flood on us. And they were astounded because nobody dares do that because it'll flood. Happens all the time. Amazing.
I want to go down to verse 20 right now. The way Jeff read it is true. But the very fascinating thing, when I found other phrases from a different translation. So I'm going to read some of it. And he says, I hide my face from them. I will see their end. I'll see them to their end. Or I will bring them to their end. I'm going to see that their end comes to an end. It's like saying, I'm going to see them and watch them fall. He's going to bring them to their end. Simplicity of how that Hebrew is. Why? Because they are a perverse generation. They're perverse people. I'm going to bring an end to them. That's the simplicity of that language. I'm going to bring it into them. Doesn't mean he's got eyeballs to see. Oh, I'm going to predict. No, he's got to bring them to the end. Remember we read about, I think it was the 30th chapter, I think it was, about the covenant that God made with them entering into the promised land? There's blessings and cursings, remember? I will bless you this way. If you don't, I'm going to carry out the curse. This is the curse. It's an agreement. It's a covenant with God. Yes.
So my scripture says, I will see what their end shall be. Instead, it should say, I will bring them to their end.
Yeah, I'll see it all the way to the end. I'll bring them to the end. He said it when you read this part of Deuteronomy, you find out, yes, he's going to do it. It's not like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. I think I'll wait. No. He says something else here. Now, it says, in children whom there is no trust. Okay. Another wording of it is this. In children who I have no confidence in. I don't trust them. This is God speaking. This generation of perverseness. I don't trust them. It's their faithfulness is one thing, which is true. I don't trust them. Don't depend upon them. They're going to go. When you're perverse, ask your own self. If you had met somebody who had, cheated on you, do you have confidence in them from that point on? Do you have trust in them? What do you have? You have, for sure, I don't trust them. That's all you do, right? When a child steals something that shouldn't steal, and what is your first immediate reaction? Oh, I trust you, my little boy, my little girl, my little daughter. I trust you that you won't do it again. You automatically say, well, wait a second. I'm going to punish you for what you did. However, I'm not going to trust you now. You have to do something to prove it, that I can depend upon it again. And sometimes a good kind of discipline, whatever it's going to use, what you have to be the judge on that one, will be effective enough for the child to say, he ain't going to do it no more. Not just say it, but you see him or her never doing it again. Because they got the message. And he says, verse 21. Hello? Oh. They have provoked me to jealousness by here's that Hebrew word again, a non-powerful being or non-powerful thing. All right? They are foolish people. They worship idols. What power does an idol have? None whatsoever. Okay? Does any jurisdiction. Then he plays a play on word here. Verse, I will provoke them now to zealousness, anger. It's always associated with anger. It's a play on words here in Hebrew by a non-existing people. That's cool. Non-existing. I will make them mad at me by provoking them to a non-existing people or a nation that doesn't exist. That's fascinating, the play on words, right? Have you ever known anybody who is terrified of people who are not even have no jurisdiction, have nothing? Yeah, you already know. You've met some people. Probably maybe you've been one. Okay. I will move them to anger by a foolish one. It's interesting. Let's turn around, fair play. Yes, you might say with God. Okay. We'll drop down to verse 24. Very interesting wording here. Previously, it said there, 20, 23, he says, I will heap disaster on them. I will spread my sword on them. Waste with anger, or waste with hunger. Devoured by pestilence and bitter destructions. I will also send against them the teeth of beasts. Now, this is a very interesting thing. Some of your translations had a really odd thing. I had to look at it. It didn't make sense to me. And I have found out what the word means. Most of you have, or have, may have, with the poisons of serpents of the dust. What? Poisons of the serpents of the dust. So I says, okay, what is that word? That word is not poison. With the fury. And the word serpent is not there. With fury and terror. Ah. With fury and terror of the dust of the earth. Or what would that mean? What is the dust of the earth? The what? The grave. Fearful of dying. Terrified. Because death is so frightening to you. Have anybody been frightened to die?
We don't have to die. We have insurance.
Health insurance, yes. Yeah. But, yeah. But you understand what I'm saying? This is, it's a really awkward way they worded it. And I said, this doesn't make sense to me. I have no idea what a poison of serpents and dust have to do with thee. And I had to do some research. And I said, oh my, that's what I was talking about. Serpent, not a good word there. It says fear or terror. I'll have furor of terror. Have you ever been frightened? When a terrorist, you think a terrorist is going to come and blow up your house? Or maybe the Golden Gate Bridge if you ride across it? Sure you are. What if you're afraid to go across the Golden Gate Bridge because it might be an earthquake?
I know that's dying.
That's all it's really talking about, right? I says, God says, I'm going to do this to you. Why? Because you are submitting yourself to non-powerful things. Not even an Elohim, not even a power that has power. There's nothing there. The kid's kind of angry. And of course, you know, verse 26 in Hebrew. In some of your languages, I would have said. That's not what it says in Hebrew. It says in Hebrew, I have said. I blow them away. I have said, I cause their remembrance to cease from man. Oh, really? He didn't say I would have, he says I did. What happened to the house of Israel? How long was it ceased from the memory of men? Oh, man. 1 year? 2 years? 200 years? 2,000 years? How many years? Ceased of remembrance. Now he's bringing them back to be remembered, but only God's doing that because he said he's going to fulfill his promise. Verse 27 is very, very awkward. Some of your translation says, if I was afraid of. Now I'm asking myself, okay, God, is that the right word here? You are fear that the enemy will do something or say something? I can't picture God being afraid of anything. This Hebrew word doesn't mean what you fear. We think it means fear. But translated that way, because there are two different kind of meanings. I'll explain it one way. It's like saying, I'm afraid you're wrong. Am I frightened? No, I'm not. I make it a statement. I'm not afraid. Or I fear you have it wrong. That's what that kind of meaning means. I had to go back in Hebrew, but it's more what this word means. Okay, there's three basic meanings of the word. One of them is to sojourn with, to be among. It's used more in sojourned than it is in any other word. The secondary meaning has a meaning that means I've got to try to figure out how to clarify his. To turn aside or turn away to a side. Okay, so trying to figure this thing out, I had to figure out, I had to go through three to four different translations to figure out, what is it this is really telling me? Because it doesn't make sense that God would be afraid that they're going to say something. And so bear with me for a moment. There one here says, if I had sojourned with the anger of the enemy, they would have misunderstood. Now, would God sojourn or be with one of Israel's enemies? He brings them to Israel. So he is actually bringing them. So he is, in a sense, abiding with them, associating himself with them, and to bring him to do the destruction he said he's going to do. Did he not do that to northern Israel? Yes. Did he not do that to Judah? Yes. Okay. When they overdid it, then God says, oh, I'm not going to sojourn with you now. I am going to do something to you because you have done something too far for you. That is one of the ways to look at it. The other one is very fascinating. Also, it means to gather together. If I had gathered together the enemy would have thought differently than what they have. The last meaning is, had I not gone out of the way to turn aside the wrath of the enemy, their enemy would misconstrue and say, God didn't do it. We did it. That makes sense? So God gone out of his way to stop the enemy from doing so much destruction. Because if he did, they would take the credit for it. And that there is no God. Or the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob is weak. Now, I'm almost finished here. You understand what I'm saying? It's fascinating when you look at this thing, find out what it really breaks down and what it kind of says in the Hebrew. And he said in the next verse, it says this, for they, the enemy, is void of counsel and no understanding in them. They don't understand what's going on. Because I didn't give them counsel, basically. He just used them. Verse 30 for a moment. It's a very interesting statement. That's an obvious statement. Okay. How can one chase a thousand? Or a myriad? The uncountable part. How can then two put 10,000 or 10 myriads, uncountable ones, to flight? How can you do that? Can you? David never could by himself. No one could. Moses couldn't do it. Joshua couldn't do it. Who did it? Unless their rock had sold them. And Yahuwah had surrounded them. It says, unless their rock had sold them, the thousands, the myriads. The next statement is very, very interesting. Look at 31. Lowercase rock, uppercase rock. All right, simple to understand. For their rock, lowercase, that had sold them, not like our rock. Interesting here, the reading in English here. For their enemies themselves judge. Their what? Judge what? The enemy, put it in simple language, they could see that their rock is not as strong, powerful, as mighty as the rock of Jacob. Because they get crushed. They get destroyed. Remember when they came out of Egypt? How many of the nations were terrified of the Israelites? Every one of them. They didn't want to go to war with them. So two of them challenged them, and what happened to them? They're gone. Out of picture. And the land became Israel's land. So they had the evidence. They saw that. Our rock, what we depend upon, our Elohim, he ain't got the power. He's weak. So leave them alone. He continues on. He says, for their vine, a vine of Sodom, and their fields of Gomorrah. Remember what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah? Went to nothing. God just destroyed them. Their grapes of gall. Their cluster, I mean the cluster of grapes, bitter. Verse 33. Very fascinating. Remember, this is a song of Moses. God's saying they're going to know this at their end. I'm going to bring them to their end. And by the time they understand their end, they're going to know who I am. How many people on this face of earth really are thinking that God is really the most important person, being? I mean, down there, I'm like, yes, really tiny here. Very, very few people. He's talking here, of course, the house of Israel. Now, verse 33, once again, they put the word poison in there. Really not a good word either. It's not the same as it was before. It's a different word. Now, remember, he talks about verse 32 about their grapes. Now, we already know that they had grapes, the blood of the grapes is wine. Right? Now, their grapes produce indignation of the serpents. And the cruel venom from the head of cobras. That's their bite. It's deadly. I'm almost finished. Bear with me. Now God's talks here in verse 34. This is not laid up in my store with me. Sealed up amongst my treasures. What's sealed up amongst these treasures? What's in his store? Verse 35. Vengeance. Recompense. It's going to come. Now, when he says, it's a very interesting thing. Verse 26, he says, for Yahweh will judge his people. Now we're back to his people, right? His heritage. Now remember, when God brings forth the judgment, is it going to be good news or bad news? First, it's going to be bad news. Real bad news. Got to make them pay for what they've done. And have compassion on his servants. When he, Elohim, or Yahweh, sees that power is gone from his people. Remember, you've got to carry them to the end. Right? When he sees the power has gone, because the prophecy says, I will take your power from you. And no one is bond or free. They're just like nobody. Powerless. And then God says, where's your Elohim? Who's going to deliver you from this stuff now? You have no power. You have nothing. You're almost like a people without a nation, without a people, without people. You're just out there in limbo. You're not even free. You're not even bond. You're just there. You're not good for either one. And he says, no. Why don't you ask your Elohims, that you served the drink offering to, and maybe they will deliver you. Maybe they will rescue you. That one will be your refuge that you get to come to. Remember this, at the latter end, the latter days. Let's see, what was that verse? In verse 29, I didn't go there. It says that they should consider their latter days, their latter end. What's going on? What's going to happen to them? Now, he said now, verse 29, I think it's very, very fascinating. Verse 39, I'm sorry. Now see what? Or now see that? I. And no Elohim besides me. What does this Elohim do that no other Elohim can do? What? I kill and I make alive. There is no Elohim that can do that. I wound and I heal. No other Elohim can do that. No other power can do that. Not even Satan can do that. He can't even do harm to you. He can't even wound you. He can't make it miserable for you. He can't do that. But Elohim, creator of heaven and earth, can. And he can use any tool he wishes to use so, because he's why? He's the creator of all things. Our creator uses rain for a blessing or a curse. Our creator uses grasshoppers for a blessing or a curse. That's his tools. Our creator uses earthquakes for a blessing or for a curse. Depends on how you want to view it and see the earthquake did do something and was for the good. He got rid of something that was evil. The flood. Did he not kill? Remember Shaddai? The one who brings forth the deluge. That's what that name means. He says, no one, there's nothing that could deliver you from my hand. No one can stop me from killing you. No one can stop me from wounding you. No one can stop me to make you alive. No one can stop me to heal you. No one, nothing, nothing there. I am the God. So that's good news, right? Let's drop down to... he says here first, he says, I raise my hand to heaven and say, as I live forever. If I want to spread my sword, it's going to happen. My hand takes hold in judgment, it's going to happen. I'll render my vengeance on my enemies. Nothing, nobody, nothing can stop me. I'll repay those who hate me. There's nothing can stop it. That's the power of Elohim. And so in our latter time, the latter days, here God is saying, oh, Moses, read this thing out and let them know this is the song they must know. What is the song about? great and marvelous your works, God Almighty, just and true your ways, King of the nations, who shall not fear you, O Lord, and glorify your name, for you alone are holy. For all nations shall come and worship before you, for your judgments have been manifested. And of course, the 10th chapter of Revelation tells you the destruction he's going to do. Drop down quickly to verse 43 and I'll call it quits. This is kind of an interesting phrase. I'm reading this in English. Rejoice! And it says, O nations or O Gentiles, rejoice, his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants. Oh, that's different, isn't it? And render vengeance on his adversaries. Remember he says, what's in my storehouse? What was in his storehouse? Vengeance. Oh. That's where his storehouse is full of it. He's going to start using it. He will do something, though. What is there? Some of your translations have it. He will provide atonement. For whom? He will provide atonement for whom? For his land and his people. Now, is that not a prophecy to the future? What was the atonement? The blood of the Messiah. The song of the Lamb. The song of the Lamb. What's the song of the Lamb? For all nations shall come and worship before you, for your judgments have been manifested. That's why it says, O nations or O Gentiles, rejoice, and my people rejoice. Vengeance has now been done. I have provided an atonement for you, for the land, and for my people. Song of the Lamb. Do you see this story? It's here. It always was here. A couple of things here. This is the end of the song there. In the verse 40, we know that now it's Dr. Joshua. And knowing that verse 46 is to set your hearts on all the words which I have testified among you today. That this was a day which he testified before them, the song of the Lamb. I mean, song of Moses, which he said, I want you to tell them today and teach them today this message, this song. So now Moses is saying, set your hearts on all the words which I've testified amongst you today. Any thoughts? Any input? It's 3 o'clock.
It's just amazing to me how so many of us as believers, it says, tell your kids, be careful to observe all the words of this law. It's not a futile thing. It is your life. And by the words, you'll prolong the days of your land in the land. And we didn't even know that it was for us. And a lot of people don't even know that he says, do it, guys.